All right, welcome back to another Baseball America Prospect Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me is my co-host some weeks, certainly my colleague, Josh Norris. Let's talk a little bit about the Philly system here.
Just shine a light on the Philly system.
Let's shine a light on the Philly system. But among the five teams that you do more teams than anybody else for the handbook. Where does this sort of sort out among those five teams? I would assume with the Dodgers probably being the best system that you do, right?
I prefer the Giants over the Dodgers at this point. It's a point of contention. It's kind of a 1A, 1B scenario. The last three are kind of, they're different than when the book came out, and not the Phillies so much. The Phillies stayed pretty static except for an IFA signing. On the 15th, but the Yankees and the Phillies, the Yankees and the Rangers both lost significant prospects since the book came out. So the Ryan Weathers trade cost the Yankees a few guys, and the Mackenzie Gore trade cost the Rangers a few guys. So those systems have degraded a little bit. I think right now it's probably Phillies number three, just because of what the power they have at the top. It's not the deepest system, but they've got a couple really good players at the top. And a really especially good one at the very top.
Well, let's get into that a little bit. How difficult was the decision to rank Aiden Miller at one? They do have another top 100 prospect, one who has been ranked extremely highly over the past few years in Andrew Painter. But what was the decision between the two and ultimately why did you go with Miller?
I went into the process prepared to write Painter as number one, and I may have written them both at number one and then pared down Painter's capsule to the 300-word instead of the 500-word version. When you talk to people outside the system and inside the system, and it was, razor's edge to Aiden Miller. I was like, all right, well, who am I to disagree with evaluators inside and outside? I've never seen Aiden Miller myself. I was hopeful to see him in the fall league, but that never materialized. But you're looking about a player who, after a pretty rough early start, kind of figured it out toward the end and has exceeded expectations in terms of being able to play shortstop and hit for power, which were two big questions coming out of the draft. The presence of Trey Turner still might mean that Miller plays somewhere other than shortstop because Trey Turner's pretty good over there. But, he can play third base pretty well and he's got the offense to profile. And then Painter, as you may remember from last year's podcast at this time, I said he's a future Hall of Famer. Really put it on the line for him last year. And it wasn't a bad year for him last year. It was an okay year with bursts of better. And there was some rust coming back from Tommy John surgery. And there was some of his stuff took a little bit step backward. They added some new wrinkles to him. I still think he has a really high ceiling. It's just he wasn't, in the rotation late in the year like I had hoped or expected he would be. Still a long way to go. I still have a lot of hope in him for him. And he's one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. But right now, he's just not the best pitching prospect in baseball.
I want to go back to Aiden Miller for a second. Was there anything, throughout the reporting process, whether it was speaking with the Phillies themselves or with, outside evaluators, anything they pointed to in particular that was sort of a tipping point in his season when, an adjustment, setup change, his hand placement, swing path. Was there anything that they sort of adjusted that sort of was the aha moment that allowed him to take that big step forward and really surge late in the season?
But early in the season, I expected him to struggle because the Eastern League is the Eastern League in April. There's very few places on the minor league map where it's not bad weather to start the year. Like if you're planning a trip, if you're a scout or something, you might want to start in like Florida or California or Texas, somewhere that's not the Eastern League. I didn't know if that was going to be mitigated by the fact that Reading is a pretty hitter-friendly place. But the one thing they pointed to, I believe, internally was that he was getting just a bushel of breaking balls, more than by their metrics, more than I believe any hitter in the minors through some certain period. And once you've got to learn which ones to rip on and how to get to the fastballs, by picking through the breaking balls, things change. And it's one of those things that's why we talk to scouts. It's like, it's so hard to see that just, on your own or necessarily in the data that we have available. We have some data, but it's not, not the whole, the deck of cards that a team is playing with, you know? So that's kind of the tipping point there, I think. And then he started to show his true potential. And then I was hoping, like I said, to see him continue it in the offense happy land that is the Fall League. And, you know, get pulled out at the last minute, just like so many guys from this year's Fall League. But yeah, I think that what gave him the edge was just like, there's that potential there. He could be really, really good. And, you know, there's plenty of offseason to go. Actually, there's not plenty of offseason. There's a little bit of offseason to go. But Dombrowski does a really good job of evaluating his own systems. And the fact that he's kept this guy in the fold tells me kind of what they think about him a little bit.
Yeah, I think for sure. I think the thing that you also called out that was surprising, because this was a guy when he was drafted at the back end of the first round a few years back, was kind of, voted as like a future third baseman. That the idea that he would stick at shortstop was probably unlikely. To this offseason, getting consistent plus grades on the glove, the arm has always been really strong. I don't think that's new. But there's like a real belief that he could stick at shortstop. And I'll be honest, I don't think it would be unreasonable if the Phillies are looking for their best defensive lineup, if he maybe did push Trey Turner to second base and, you know, maybe Alec Baum ends up getting moved, et cetera. Like, those things have kind of been rumored for a while. This might be the Phillies shortstop for the next 5 to 6 years. I don't think that's crazy to say. No,
I don't think that's crazy to say. I don't know if that's this year or in the coming years, or I don't know. You know, Aiden Miller has to get to AAA first. Did he get to AAA? I got a little bit there at the end. But if it's not this year, it might be next year or what have you. But he's certainly got the chops to do it. Put it that way. And it wouldn't surprise me if he gets a little bit of reps there this year, especially if to spell Turner or things like that. But it's nice to have a guy that you're pretty sure can stick on the left side regardless and have the offense to profile either spot. So they took a risk on this guy in the draft when, you know, it was, like you said, it wasn't a slam dunk that he'd play shortstop or even a layup that he'd play shortstop. And the power was a question because he'd had a wrist injury, and both those things have come back in spades. And now he looks like, you know, a top 20 prospect in the game. I don't remember where we ranked him, but it's high.
Yeah. The other one I want to call out too is he's kind of this unique guy who puts up elite stolen base numbers in the minor leagues, but is only an average runner. And just, I think even looking at the run times, that's pretty consistent. So do you think that the stolen bases, like, is he still a 20 stolen base guy in a full season in the majors? Is it more than that?
Sure. I think he can get to 20.
Of instincts over speed.
I mean, I've got a couple of those guys in my systems. I do the Dodgers as well. And nobody's going to mistake Josue DePaula for a burner or a Kendall George or a Kellen Lindsay, but he stole 30 bags last year. And that's, sometimes you steal bags on pure speed, like you're a Chandler Simpson or a guy like that, or sometimes you steal them, you know, through the rules have changed a little bit with the pickoffs, but you steal them through guile and reading pitchers and knowing which catchers run and advance reports and things like that. That's how he got to them. And those things, you can sharpen those when you get to the big leagues, but it's not something that just goes away. The defenders get better, but you can still read pitchers and learn how to take jumps and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I think you're right. I know we're spending a little longer here on the top two prospects, but I think there's a good reason behind that. They're both very interesting players. Going back to Andrew Painter now, it was an up and down season. And I think depending upon the day, I know that, you know, Ian Kundle and I were in Worcester one time where he absolutely shoved and looked phenomenal. The fastball was very hittable despite the ride that he gets and the velocity. It just seems like hitters really see that pitch pretty well. The secondaries, on the other hand, are phenomenal. He's got a deep repertoire, really commands all of those well. That's where a lot of his swing and miss comes from. Have the Phillies talked about altering the fastball shape, adding a more prominent sinker in terms of usage, or like maybe more of a cut ride type of profile? Because he has enough traits that I would assume that there's another fastball shape in there that works, and the power. How do the Phillies sort of navigate that question regarding the four seam fastball?
Well, they added a cutter and a two seamer, and you didn't use them crazy amounts during the regular season. But one thing they pointed to, and I had another team point this out to me with a different pitcher, was that when you come back from Tommy John surgery, sometimes it's hard to keep a consistent arm slot. And they say his slot might have dropped a little bit and kind of created a different shape than his ideal this year. And so they're, you know, hoping two full seasons now off of TJ, they may see a little uptick or improvement in the shape. And I thought that was kind of an interesting little way to look at it. And it makes sense because you haven't, you know, he missed almost two full years, save for those six starts in the fall league. I can understand over the course of a regular season, your arm gets a little tired, your slot drops. Shoot, I remember this is completely off the beaten path, but when we used to play like sandlot ball, the BA employees would go to there's a backfield right behind our old office. And I was this all-time pitcher because I wanted to. Remember one point, John Manuel removed me because he said my slot was dropping. And it was like, first of all, we're taking this very seriously. I'm throwing about 40 miles an hour at best. But I kind of stuck with me. I was like, okay, first of all, he's noticing that with me. I granted I was pitching to his son. And, you know, I don't think he wanted to get hit by anything from old Wild Bear here. But, you know, I thought about that a little bit when we were talking about Painter's slot dropping a little bit. Obviously, he throws a little harder than I do and more innings. I was like, okay, you get a little more tired as the longer season goes along. Your slot drops a little bit. Your fastball shape drops. Like, all right, interesting.
That's really funny. Yeah, it's good old BA sandlot scouting of the internal prospects. All right, let's move on to the next one. Question we always throw out there. How has this system gotten better or worse over the last year, Josh? What are your thoughts there?
I mean, it got a little better at the top because Miller took even more strides, I think. But it's just not the deepest system. You know, Justin Crawford still is a very intriguing and divisive prospect, especially when it comes to defense. He's still not getting the ball off the ground as much as you would like. Some guys graduated that, you know, would be helpful. But there was also a lot of injuries. Like, you know, you didn't get to see the full, Griffin Burkholder experience because he was hurt. You know, Alex McFarland came back from TJ, looked pretty good. Devin Saltaban obviously had an unfortunate injury. And it was just a lot of tread and water in the system. I don't think it's not a very deep system. But there's some interesting stuff there. So I don't remember where we had him ranked this year, but it's toward the 20-30. It's somewhere in the 20 to 30 range.
Yeah, that's interesting. And do you feel like in terms of this last draft, better or worse in terms of the players that have been added to the system? You know, obviously they have somebody here at five in Gage Wood that, you know, has a lot of relief risk, but also has, I think, major upside. And, you know, could potentially be somebody maybe in the conversation for one that we'll probably talk about that in a little bit. Better or worse draft class in terms of the incoming talent?
I'm going to do some bad podcasting and say push. Just because Wood, you know, pitched a little bit. Fisher didn't pitch at all. I don't think Obermiller got much. A lot of their guys just didn't do anything this year. And we'll see what they look like. It's very pitcher heavy in terms of the guys that I ranked. They also traded away some of the guys at the back of their system. They also traded some guys at the front of their system. They traded Tait. I'm blanking on who else. Mick Abel, even though he didn't count for the prospect stuff anymore. But, you know, they lost some guys at the top. They added some guys that we'll see. They have a couple guys that jumps forward. But it's just, there's a few good guys at the top. And it's not just, like I said, it's just not depthy. I feel like I'm saying the same thing, but it's not, it's true every time. It's just not a depthy system right now. And we're kind of waiting in a holding pattern on a few of the draft guys from last year. And then, you know, even in the book, they don't reflect the guy they just added, Francisco Renteria, on the international market, who has some pretty boom bust potential based on the great Ben Badler scouting report. We slotted him in. You'll see where we slot him in. If this comes out tomorrow on Tuesday, you'll see it the next day. So Wednesday, it's supposed to go on the site. But we're slotting in all the IFAs. And then accounting for any other movement. So like, if you read my Ranger system, all the guys from the Gore trade are gone, or the Yankee system, all those guys are gone. Adjusted 30s are coming to the site Wednesday, and then 31 through 40 a few weeks later.
All right. Well, let's get into the next question here. Who are your guesses for who could the number one prospect be in the system next year? Let's say if Aiden Miller does graduate, because there's obviously a chance that he doesn't.
Yeah, I think there's a strong chance he doesn't graduate, but we'll see. If he does, I mean, you might be right. It might be Wood. I could see an outside chance at Matthew Fisher. Not a lot of obvious candidates right there. It's just easy to take the first rounder and bump him up. You don't know who they're going to add in this coming draft. Maybe that guy could be your number one draft pick. But there's a lot of guys that, like, you know, if you told me Miller, Painter, and Crawford all graduated, wouldn't be super surprising. Then you're left with Escobar, I would be stunned if he graduated. It's probably him and Wood fighting for it. And really outside of that, I mean, maybe you want to go super wild card. Like I just said, Francisco Renteria, who they just added. There's not a whole lot of like slam dunk guys. Like if you're talking about, I don't know if we've done the White Sox podcast, but like pretty sure we know who they're going to take at one. And I'm pretty sure he's going to wind up as their number one overall prospect next year. There's no that guy for them, for the Phillies.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was sort of the easy answer, you know, with the Phillies, that it's like, there's no one like that's a true guy, and they're not going to draft high enough, and they're not going to make a trade for a prospect and start tearing this thing down and rebuild unless it goes really south. And I would be even shocked if that happened. So let's move on to the final question on the video portion of the podcast, Josh. What is this organization good at developing?
I'm going to answer that in a roundabout way. I'm going to say, you know, I love the way Brian Barber operates, where he takes risky profiles and does a good job getting the most out of them. You know, in the 2020 draft, he went with Mick Abel, high school right-hander out of greatest state in the Union, Oregon, but not a great state for, you know, baseball talent usually, although there's been some good ones come out there recently. Andrew Painter is a high school right-hander who's also like 6'7". That's not a very... Thank you. I knew you were going to do that. It's a profile fraught with risk. We talked about Miller. You know, his stock was a little bit depressed based on the injury, but they took the bet on him at the back and up the back of the first round, I think, and did really well with it. You know, I like that. You go with upside, the upside that you can when you draft low. Based, you know, you keep winning in the big leagues, you're going to draft a little bit lower. So that's the kind of strategy I like. Draft some upside and then hope your developers get the most out of it. Kate Obermuller is the same way. It's not the least risky, the safest profile, but there's a lot of upside there. Same idea, Matthew Fisher, high school right-hander, pretty interesting profile. And you're just betting on upside. You're just trying to shoot the moon. And I like that strategy, and it's worked for them all pretty well so far.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And as we sort of wrap up the video portion of the podcast here, any other players from the top 10? You had spoke fairly highly of Matthew Fisher as like a dark horse for number one next year. For those not familiar, fill us in a little bit about Fisher, because, you know, high school guy, obviously. So someone that we're obviously don't have as much, you know, insight and eyes on.
Yeah, Matthew Fisher is a high school right-hander, like you said, from Indiana, who's got, you know, a good frame and a good mix of pitches. Yeah, there's a plus slider on the card, above average fastball, potential for a fringy changeup, average strike thrower, good pitcher's frame at 6'3", 200. All those things are there for him to develop it. And if you get the most out of them, then you can shoot up. I mean, it's the same kind of all-in approach that I like. Instead of taking just the safe college guy at the back, there's a chance he could flame, absolutely. But there's also significant upside, and, you know, pitching is the name of the game. So he could be valuable in trade in a couple of years, or this year if he really develops in the lower levels.
Well, there we have it. For those that have tuned in on YouTube, thank you for joining us. For those that are listening on the podcast feed, we got more questions for you coming in just a minute.
Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family, are pulled from public records and the internet and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off of your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura's online security capabilities have allowed me to feel safe when it comes to my online presence. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal. It is a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep logins safe, and spam call protection to cut off scammers. Aura also scans the dark web for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, and passwords, and notifies you instantly if they're exposed. Aura also removes what is already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. See the site for details.
All right, and we are back with more Phillies Top 30 Talk. Jeff Ponce, Josh Norris, Baseball America podcast. Josh, let's jump into the fun parts of the show. Who are some of the sleepers in this Philly system? Because I think after 10, maybe even after like 9, there aren't a lot of names that people know in this system. So who are a few that you'd want to shine the light on a little bit?
You know, I think we just had an article on this. Go on the site here, like today, yesterday, if you're listening to this. But one guy I really liked was Ramon Marquez, whose name came up, you know, mid-season. Interesting right-hander with pretty good fastball changeup combo. Needs a slider to come, but he did a really good job in the FCL, and then very well, save for one really disaster start in the Florida State League. He could be an up arrow prospect. That's why I ranked him at 12. Just given, I guess, the kind of lack of depth in the system, and there's a lot of upside there. Who else do I like? Anderson Araujo, kind of a nice potential backup catcher with some thump. Who did well in the DSL this year. Gabe Craig, right-hander, is a guy that they really like. And he's older. He's like 24 already. He's got big-time slider, and they think he can move really quickly and be one of those guys that, you know, outside chance at the majors this year if things go really well. They internally and externally, people pointed to him. Griffin Burkholder's got tools, but he doesn't have the health tool right now. So, you know, when you talk to scouts, they're like, you see it in fits and starts, but you only see him in fits and starts. So, you know, if it all comes together health-wise, you might see the most out of his tools there. And those are the guys I can come up with off the top of my head. It's not the, like I said, full of big-time sleepers at the back either, but those are a few names.
Yeah, it's not. It's a lot of like guys who perform their way onto the list, and then guys that had some shine maybe out of the draft. Or they do something well that you're just not fully bought in on as major league players. There's a lot of those guys in the system. What I wanted to ask you about though, because you know I always have Rule 5 draft fever. So what are the chances that you think Zach McCambly makes this roster this year and actually sticks with the Phillies?
There's a good chance. I mean, he's a big league ready reliever with a nasty breaking ball. You know, if they can find a way to use him in low leverage situations, I wouldn't be surprised if he sticks in that bullpen. It's, you know, they took him for a reason. I wouldn't be super surprised. Teams have gotten better at this, as J.J. Cooper will tell you, finding guys to stick in the Rule 5.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, definitely a pretty interesting arm. You know, guy that was a starter at one point, and as you said, is now kind of major league ready as a reliever. Interesting angles. And it's also a bullpen that I feel like is always under reconstruction. No, I mean, it feels like it's one that's been like a consistent running narrative of this Phillies team over the last couple of years as they've been chasing championships. But Josh, I want to thank you for joining me today to talk about this Philly system. Any sort of like high level closing thoughts on the system, where it's going, et cetera?
High level. Okay. No pressure. You know, like I've said 1,000 times on this podcast already, it's not the deepest, but if you have Andrew Painter and Aiden Miller and Justin Crawford at the top, that's fine. JJ always tells us that, like, I'd rather have 2 or 3 future stars at the top than a bunch of, 45s and 50s throughout. And that's what they have right now. If you get the ceiling, if you get Painter and Crawford and Miller to reach their ceilings, that's 3 really good ball players. And that's really valuable. It can help your team that's getting a little, well, they're all getting older, but a team that's starting to age a little bit really help in the coming years as they try to compete in an increasingly competitive NL East. The Mets are bulking up. The Braves obviously had a bounce back or a bad year last year, but we'll see what they look like this year. And we'll see what the Marlins and the Nats do in the coming years. Obviously, the Nats are a couple of years away. But, trying to battle the Mets and the Braves for the next couple of years, we'll see how it goes. But if those guys are what we think they are, that'll go a long way toward pushing them back toward the World Series.
Absolutely. All right, Josh, thanks for joining me, man. That has been the Philadelphia Phillies Top 30 Prospect Podcast Breakdown. Thanks for tuning in to another Baseball America podcast. For all you that are subscribers, once again, we send our sincere appreciation. This is how we get to do this every day, full time, covering baseball. And season's winding down. The off season is winding down. We are almost, pitchers and catchers, all the good stuff's about to happen. Lots of content on the site. So please check that out. Thanks for tuning in.